Dillygaff, and welcome to the Geeks of Doom Roundup. My name is Andy Sorsini. I am known as Mr. Baby Man amongst my social media circles, and I'm here with Greg Davies, who is known as CGT2099 amongst his social media circles.
Listen carefully, that number will become prominent later in this episode.
And this is the show where we talk a little bit about movies, music, and what's going down on the podcast Social Blend, the drill down, and what's going on the Geeks of Doom itself. So there we go. That's basically the synopsis of the show. How you doing, Greg?
I'm doing good, Andy. Dillygaff to you, my friend, and Dillygaff to our Geeks of Doom listening to us at geeksofdoom.com. How you doing, everyone? We've got a great show for you today.
Yeah.
We've got some interesting stuff to talk about. A couple of stories that we picked out from geeksofdoom.com itself, which are going to cause a bit of conversation, I would imagine. Some interesting stuff going on there.
We've really decided to geek out this episode too.
Yeah, we're stepping away from Whitney Houston this week. Yes, there you go. So continuing on from our previous episode, we're jumping in and giving you a preview of movies and music. And of course, I've picked a trailer for you this week, Andy, that I'm actually quite excited about this, I must admit. I'm more excited than I thought I would be, because it's The Bourne Legacy.
And, yeah, this is a teaser trailer, right? This is not
yes.
the...
No, but it's a good audio trailer, and that's the reason I picked it. There's some really good dialogue in this particular trailer. And the interesting thing about The Bourne Legacy, for those who don't know, it's the fourth movie in the Bourne series, but the character Jason Bourne, played by Matt Damon, is not in this film.
What? Well, how could they call it The Bourne Legacy if he's not... I don't understand.
I'm glad you asked. Well, actually...
Oh, wait, I thought that there was only one.
There's more than one. It turns out that... And this is somewhat related to the Ludlum novels as well, although, the Bourne film series took, a lot of creative differences in their modernization of the series. The concept is that the Treadstone soldier or agent, if you will, that there was more than just the one. There were many more that were trained to follow the directive of the Treadstone Initiative. And in this film, it's taken under a different name and being spearheaded by someone, being played by Edward Norton, who I'm a huge fan of for his acting. He's just absolutely superb. I'm a big fan of his acting.
Mm-hmm.
And the main person taking on the Bourne role is Jeremy Renner, who is somewhat of a new up-and-coming person, really.
Yeah,
when you think about it, he's really become noticed a lot in the last couple of years since
The Hurt Locker.
Since The Hurt Locker. And, of course, he's also Hawkeye in the upcoming Avengers film.
And he was in Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol.
Oh, yes, he was. I haven't actually seen that yet. But,
oh,
he's
I'm great
very interested
in, that.
In seeing that.
Yes.
You know, people kind of poo-poo on that whole Tom Cruise franchise, but I actually like the Mission Impossible series.
Absolutely. I love that. I'd be the last person to poo-poo on that one. I think maybe if I would was to poo on any one of those, it might be the second movie in the series. But
well, see, I can't, because that was set in Australia, so I have to support my local scene, you know what I mean? But anyway, all that aside, one of the things about the Bourne series is that the plot, essentially, movie to movie, is very much the same. I mean, let's admit it. It's, a guy, a secret agent, who is on the run from those who created him to be the killing machine that he was. That's always the plot.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that sells the Bourne series is that is the pace of the action, the rate at which the movie is moving, is such an exciting cinema-going experience, that I think they're taking a huge gamble on trying to be able to accomplish the same thing, but without their leading star Matt Damon this time around. This time they're gambling on Jeremy Renner. It looks to be a very similar plot. There's some similar faces showing up who were in the previous three movies.
Jonah Allen and Albert Finney. But he's not. Jeremy Renner is not a Bourne, right?
He's like a Bourne clone, basically. So he's been trained under the Treadstone project, but it's Treadstone under a different name from all indications here.
Mm.
So it does follow a similar theme or thematic approach that's actually in the novel of the Bourne Legacy novel, aside from the fact that Jason Bourne isn't in the whole story at all.
Mm.
So it'll be very interesting to see, but the trailer is actually quite exciting. There's some visual stuff going on there, so I highly recommend you check it out. But the audio, the delivery of the lines in this is quite suspenseful, and it gives you a taste of what to expect from the Bourne Legacy. So let's take a listen.
What's your name?
Kenneth Kitson.
Where are you from?
Reno.
Will you give yourself to this program?
Yes, sir.
Right hand, please. Well, that has healed well. Any diminished sensation?
No.
There is nothing that you wouldn't do for this country. You have the strength to do what's necessary.
Welcome to the program.
Jason Bourne was the tip of the iceberg.
Who the hell is he?
He's an outcome agent.
He's Treadstone without the inconsistency. We have never seen evaluations like this.
Exciting, huh? It sounds great.
Oh, yeah.
I love just it captures the same kind of suspense, you know, suspenseful feel that the previous three movies had. So I'm looking forward to this, and you know, it's going to be a big summer for Renner with this movie and the Avengers coming
out
as well. So you know, I'm definitely I very rarely go to the theaters anymore.
Yeah, this looks like it'll be a must-see. It's Tony Gilroy, too, who written and directed by Tony Gilroy. And Tony Gilroy, like, wrote, I think he wrote the screenplay for all of the previous Bourne movies, and I think this is the first time he's directing a Bourne movie. Because the previous ones, I believe, were Doug Liman and Paul Greengrass directed. So this'll be interesting to see the screenwriter of the Bourne movies behind the directing helm of his first Bourne movie.
That can always go one of two ways, of course. Like, it can be absolutely superb, or it can be, you know, not as anticipated. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I guess we'll wait and see how it goes. But, you know, so far I've been rather happy with the Bourne series. I mean, you know, they're essentially the same film, but they're always exciting. You can always rewatch them. You know, the pace is always on the go. It's a good, solid action thriller, and you know, I think the trend will continue with this movie, and hopefully it'll be a bigger springboard for Jeremy Renner than what the Hurt Locker was. You know, this could be a huge leap for his career, I would imagine, if it does well.
Sure, absolutely. I mean, this is sizing him up to be the next action hero, essentially. You know, right? The American James Bond.
Yeah, yeah, So, well, you know, and essentially that's what Jason Bourne was.
Yeah.
I mean, they took a lot of liberty with the new movie series. I mean, I don't know if you've ever read the book, but the original book of the Bourne Identity is very different from the way the movie turned out. I mean, the concept is the same. You know, there's a guy, he's a spy or something. He's lost his memory. He's trying to get it back. He's on the run. That bit is, that's probably as close to the, you know, the original novel
mm-hmm.
as what the movie gets. They've really amped it up and brought it into, you know, a modern setting. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see where they go from here. And so, Andy, last week on the roundup, we paid tribute to Whitney Houston, who passed away.
Yes, we did.
It's a week that's just gone, and we've already lost someone else in the music industry, although it's obviously not getting as much press as what Whitney Houston did. The bassist from MC5, Michael Davis, passed mm-hmm. away today.
He was 68 years old, and I didn't see exactly what he passed away. Was it natural causes?
It's according to this, it's liver failure. I'm looking at so.
Well, hopefully it was liver failure from natural causes and not because you can hit the bottle hard enough that you will, you know, kill your liver.
Right.
MC5. Now, when we mentioned this initially on the show, Greg, I had to admit that I was not familiar with MC5 at all. Mm-hmm. But then you sent me the link to one of their songs, and I realized that I recognized this song from back in the day. Classic, yes, classic proto punk song. But I, you know, for in honor of President's Day,
yeah,
I didn't want to just play the MC5 version of the song. So in honor of President's Day, I actually found a version by the Presidents of the United States of America. You know, the group who did that song Lump, and I can't remember what other tunes that they did, but they were big in their day too.
Dune Buggy, Kitty, Peaches.
Yes, Peaches.
Going to the country.
Yeah. now, this is a very, very short version. Short and sweet, I believe. And they've altered the lyrics just slightly, a little bit, to reflect the group themselves, the Presidents of the United States of America. But I think it was very appropriate for President's Day. And a fitting tribute to the legacy of the song from that Michael Davis was part of the group of MC5. So without further ado, let me play Kick Out the Jams by the Presidents of the United States of America. A short, sweet, little kick-ass little romp here. So here we go. Go tight, yeah. Grungy, and just get hits you and then runs away screaming.
It's like a baseball bat across the back of the head when you need it.
Yeah.
I got to say, the interesting thing is, like, being the metal historian that I am, Andy, I have to bring up, there's some people who are probably familiar with the song because it's a classic, timeless song. The MC5 came out at a very crucial point in rock history. They were very much, you know, in the late 60s, early 70s, where they were pushing out a particular sound that would be highly influential of the bands that would later stand up in the metal genre and the bands that would later stand up in the punk genre. And the interesting thing about this particular song is that when it was originally released, it was not a studio recording.
Or like a garage. It was something.
No, it was recorded live in concert and released on a live album. It was the first time it ever came out. It was a live version. And so if you ever look up the original version by MC5, off the Kick Out the Jams album, it's live. And it was actually some controversy behind that because the lead singer at the beginning of the song says very clearly, "It's time to kick out the jams, motherfucker." And the record company were going to refuse the release of the album, and they wanted to edit that out, but the band and their manager strongly opposed the position of the record label. So eventually they released two versions of the album, one with a censored version and an uncensored version that was only to be sold from behind record
counters. Oh.
So, well, you know, how far we've come, though, in that time is quite interesting. So, you know, this, of course, was well before the days of the parental advisory, explicit lyrics, stickers and stuff like that. But it's definitely a most memorable tune and highly influential. I can't stress how important this particular song is, you know, with Michael Davis and Rob Tyner and the soul brother himself, Wayne Kramer, on the guitar. I can't stress how important that particular song was in the history of rock and roll. Major importance.
Well, and then we celebrate and salute the legacy of Michael Davis on this episode.
Absolutely. And I got to... I really don't have a segue for this because this is the most unusual story that I've come across on Geeks of Doom.
Yeah,
because it's just, dude, this is just totally up the geek.
I have to admit that when I saw this, I was like, what?
Yeah, totally.
Like this is like something a geek-obsessed high schooler would make up, but that you would never expect to see something like this in real life. Go ahead and describe what I'm talking about here.
Well, let me preface this by saying that last week was not exactly a very fun week for me. I was not long after we recorded the previous edition of the Geeks of Doom Roundup. I caught a bad case of bronchitis and was pretty much bedridden all week. So we ended up having to cancel Social Blend, and I had to drop all my Geeks of Doom, responsibilities for posting articles and stuff like that. And usually, Dave and Eve from Geeks of Doom, if they spot anything related to Doctor Who, they usually throw it at me because I'm kind of the Whovian of the bunch.
Sure.
I'm the TARDIS Blend guy, right?
Right. So, you host the TARDIS Blend, which is the Doctor Who podcast here on Geeks of Doom.
That's right. And so, thankfully, I completely had overlooked this news that was announced this week just gone, although there had been rumors of this among comic book fan circuits for some time now. Thankfully, Empress Eve, the wonderful Empress Eve, stepped up to the plate and posted an article about it. And basically, the announcement is that IDW Comics are going to release the first ever crossover comic book between Star Trek and Doctor Who. That's right, folks. You heard that right here.
My mind just exploded. When I heard this, my head just exploded.
And it's going to be very interesting, I think, because when you sit back and think about it, Doctor Who could actually potentially fit nicely and snugly into the Star Trek universe.
Yeah, sure, because a Time Lord can go anywhere in any time. according to the laws of the Time Lord universe, the Gallifreyans. They can show up. They could show up in the Star Wars universe.
Well, that would then imply that the Star Wars universe is the same universe as the Star Trek universe.
Well, it's a galaxy far, far away, but that's not a limitation for the TARDIS.
Well, you know, there's also in one episode of The Next Generation, Jean-Luc Picard actually mentions a planet named Coruscant as well. So, you know, there's been hints and tips for years that there's a tie. I always like to think that the Jedi Order eventually evolved and settled on a planet called Vulcan. And evolved into the Vulcan species, and then their Sith counterparts descended on Romulus. So you got this, dichotomy between those two planets that's akin to the Jedi and the Sith. But I mean, that's just me having a geekgasm right there. But anyway, this is going to be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to this very much. Now, I have done some reviews of the Doctor Who comic series from IDW, and I have to say that out of the series that I've reviewed so far, it's pretty hit and miss. There's some really good issues that have been put out there, but at the same time, there's been a couple that I haven't been too overly happy with. So it really, really kind of depends on the creative approach that they're taking for this particular comic book series. I'm looking forward to seeing it. I'm hopefully going to get a chance to review it when it comes out. It's going to be an 8-issue series, and it's entitled Star Trek The Next Generation, Doctor Who, Assimilation 2. And basically, the Doctor will be teaming up with Captain Picard on
Assimilation,
the Enterprise.
Assimilation implies that the Borg is going to be involved.
Yes, actually, the synopsis, according to... Eve in the post says, launching in May, Star Trek The Next Generation Doctor Who Assimilation 2 will feature fan favorite villains the Borg and the Cybermen.
Oh my.
As they create an unholy alliance resulting in potential disaster for all humanity. And again, that fits really when you think about it. It's the same kind of, you know, assimilation deal that both, you know, species had. Picard and the crew of the Enterprise find themselves joining forces with the Doctor and his companions, who I'm informed are Amy Pond and Rory Williams, and with the fate of the galaxy hanging in the balance. So it should be a lot of fun.
I had a geekgasm in my mind just thinking about this is going to be a fun series to watch, to read, I think.
You know, the Doctor Who fans are probably questioning now, these Cybermen that they speak of, are they the Cybermen of the original classic series, or are they the Cybermen from the alternative universe in the new modern series of Doctor Who? So it'd be interesting to see what direction they take with this bunch of Cybermen and how they fit into the Borg as well. And it kind of expands like the universe of the Borg a little bit as well. I remember reading a Star Trek book years ago which blew my mind, that hinted that V'ger from the original Star Trek motion picture tied into the very early history of the Borg. And that just completely blew my mind. But when I thought about it, I was like, you know, that actually makes sense. It fits in perfectly. And so I'm sure that there's some Star Trek continuity geeks out there that are going, oh my God, more stuff. But, I'm looking at this as a lot of fun. 32 full color pages available in stores May 2012. And there'll be some variant covers. And, it's going to be a lot of fun. So there you go.
Yep. So let's talk about the story that I found on Geeks of Doom here this week.
While we're in outer space.
While we're in space, and while I'm talking to CGT 2099. So Greg, are you familiar with the 1970s British TV show Space 1999?
Yes, I am. I'm not fully acquainted with it. Like, I do recall seeing episodes of it years and years and years ago, but I do recall it.
Yeah, this is a series that was created by Gerry Anderson, who was a guy who had previously created the series Thunderbirds, the one with the marionettes, and another show called UFO, which was also marionettes. He had this long history of creating these all of these shows that had marionettes involved, but they were all science fiction based shows. He was a lover of science fiction and a good creator of sci-fi drama with those marionettes. And this was one of his earliest forays into live action science fiction storytelling. Space 1999. It was a story about a base on the moon, a scientific research base on the moon called Moonbase Alpha, and Moonbase Alpha. There's an explosion on the moon that causes the moon to rocket out of orbit, to move away from the Earth and go hurtling as its own, like, giant moving spaceship. And Space 1999 is the story of what happens to the crew on board this moon base after the moon gets hurtled out of orbit by this nuclear explosion. And it was an iconic series. I used to love it. Martin Landau and Barbara Bain, who were both came from the Mission Impossible series, were the leads in this show, Space 1999. And the news has come from ITV Studios America and HD Films that they are going to be rebooting that show as a remake called Space 2099.
Now, I need to know whether I'm going to get a cut of the profits.
Right, because you were 2099 first.
Right. I'm not telling anyone that I ripped it off from the Marvel comic book series of the same name, but, you know, that's not the point.
The executive producer, Jace Hall, says, while we are indeed reimagining the franchise and bringing something new and relevant to today's audience, I feel strongly that some of the overall tones set by the original Space 1999 television show represent an exciting platform to explore possibilities. And so, it's a good jumping off point. I think this is going to be exciting. I can't wait to see a reboot. This comes from one of the executives involved. That same guy that I spoke about, Jace Hall. He was the executive producer on the V remake, too. So I think he's got some history behind remaking classic sci-fi television. So
it's kind of about time, though, when you think about it. I mean, it's been a few years since we've had a good space exploration style sci-fi television series. The last notable one I can think of was Battlestar Galactica, you know, which ended several years ago. And, you know, it's from the sci-fi nerd perspective, it's been too long a wait between, jumps into the great beyond, shall we say.
Yeah. And this show, like the closest thing that I can, the closest analogy that for people who aren't familiar with the show that I can describe it is it's kind of a cross between Deep Space Nine and Star Trek. What's that one with the one with Captain Janeway?
Voyager.
Yeah, because Voyager was lost, essentially, and they were trying to find their way back home, right?
I honestly can't recall. I wasn't really a follower of Voyager. I did see Deep Space Nine.
And Deep Space Nine was a base. So it's kind of the story of this base that gets hurtled off into space and is lost and trying to find their way back home. And the interesting thing about this is that what excites me about this is that the original Space 1999 was not widely known here in the States. It had a following, but it didn't have a huge following because it was a show that came from the overseas, from the UK, and I think it had syndication on not on major networks. It had syndication on smaller networks, So this is an opportunity for a broader audience to get acquainted with the whole Space 1999 concept, because I believe this is going to be distributed on much broader networks than it was before. So there's no ETA for this project. It's just coming up soon in the near future.
Doctor Who geeks would be interested in knowing that Terrence Dix and Barry Letts had contributed some work to the original Space 1999 series.
Mm-hmm.
And those two were the showrunners of the John Pertwee era of Doctor Who.
Oh, nice.
So as a matter of fact, like, you know, when Space 2099 was kicking up its gears to take off on television in the UK, they were kind of moonlighting on that series, mostly uncredited, to try and get the series, you know, kicking on British television. So while they were doing Doctor Who at the same time.
So moving on to our own shows, Greg, why don't you tell us what's going on this week on Social Blend? Are you going to make up for the episode that you didn't have this week?
Yes, we're going to talk about a lot of stuff that has happened over the last couple of weeks as opposed to the previous week. We're actually having a bit of a Geeks of Doom focus episode this week because we have special guests, Hunter Camp from geeksofdoom.com, as well as Stephen Lackey from geeksofdoom.com as well. So we're going to have three or four contributors to geeksofdoom.com on the one podcast happening there. So it should be interesting. So we are going to talk about stuff such as the new trailer for The Amazing Spider-Man and the stuff that we've already spoken about on this podcast as well. But we're also, like we do on Social Blend, we talk about some of the stuff going on around the world as well, including an upcoming bill happening in Canada called Bill C-309, which looks to be quite Orwellian in a lot of ways. Basically, it makes it a crime to wear a mask while protesting, and it could impose up to a 5-year sentence. And so we're going to talk about that and the merits of that particular proposed legislation and ponder about what it could mean if similar legislation makes its way down here in the United States. Meanwhile, overseas, we're going to take a look at the progress of the ACTA treaty, looking at restricting your rights on the internet that's being advertised as an anti-counterfeiting treaty, as Bulgaria joined Poland and Germany in refusing to support the act. We're going to follow the news about that. And of course, we're going to catch up on the stuff about Whitney Houston, including some news that came out regarding, as we'd mentioned on the previous episode, that there has been evidence of people using some price gouging techniques following the news of her passing to make a bit more money on her music after her death. And so that's what we're looking at this week on Social Blend. What about the drill down?
Drill down this week, we are going to be talking about there was an interesting article in the New York Times called How Companies Learn Your Secrets. And it's basically about how the field of data analysis, modern data analysis on the web, and how companies are taking all of that data and they're parsing it in ways that they can find out incredibly personal things about you without you ever having told them anything, basically all based on your shopping habits, based on your clicks. So we're going to be talking a little bit about that. We're going to be talking about Facebook launching their verified accounts and allowing pseudonyms. We'll also be covering a Chinese firm that is suing Apple for $2 billion in the United States over the iPad name, because apparently they had the iPad name first, and they had.
Oh yeah, so I was following some news about this earlier today. Actually, it's an interesting tale.
Yeah. Apparently they had made an arrangement with Apple when Apple first came out with the iPad to They had made an arrangement with them to not use the iPad name in China at all. And Apple has since used the iPad name in China. And because there's some export issues there, it has now opened the gates for them suing Apple in the United States over the same issue. So there's that. And speaking of Apple, we are going to be discussing some of the features in the upcoming Mountain Lion release of their OS X operating system. That amongst, there may be a couple other things that pop up later on in the week that we'll be covering also. But you can see it all on the Drill Down, which is on geeksofdoom.com.
That's right. And when do you guys go live, mate?
We are live Wednesday evenings at 7 o'clock Pacific Standard Time ish. I say ish because it usually ends up being around 7:10, 7:15, and then we release our audio MP3 version on the following Friday, Friday morning, so that you can download it and drive to work with it. And how about yourself, Greg? When do you release Social Blend?
Social Blend is available online at social-blend.com from about Thursday mornings. So you can check it out for your commute on your way to work on Thursday mornings. And, of course, you can also catch us on iTunes as well. So make sure you do the clickety-click thing and subscribe to us.
Yes, yes. Same here. iTunes link is on the Geeks of Doom site on the right-hand corner. So make sure to subscribe so you don't have to think about it. It just automatically comes to your pod playing device.
Exactly. And of course, you know, Geeks of Doom has its own little network of podcasts as well, from the Drill Down to Comics of Doom and Flicks of Doom and
TARDIS Blend
as well. So you can check all of that out at geeksofdoom.com. And of course, we're here as well, the Geeks of Doom Roundup, giving you a touch of movies, music, what's going on at geeksofdoom.com and also on our podcast. And we'll be back yet again for another edition of the Geeks of Doom Roundup next week. And we'll catch you then.
Dilly gaff.
Dilly gaff, yeah.